Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen, resplendent in my Florida flannels, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for April 26th, 2012, episode number 389, Good Morning, Horse World.
Good morning!
It's Thursday.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Set in the heart of the Bluegrass State lies the United States' premier equestrian facility. The Kentucky Horse Park needs no introduction, and horses and riders who come here are truly the world's best athletes. Coming to Rolex is a dream for many. Many will hope to get here and few will make it. But for those who do, they have one common goal in mind: conquer the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event.
Well, good morning, everybody. I am here, actually not quite in Kentucky yet. I'm still at the studios in Ocala, Florida. We had a slight change in plans for the shows this week. We'll be coming to you live from Kentucky at the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event tomorrow. Jamie's getting situated there. I think she just arrived at the park. She got in late last night, just arrived at the park over there, and is going to get everything situated and come live from there tomorrow. But Jennifer and I thought we'd hold down the fort today and give you a little bit of the preview of what's going on at Rolex Kentucky 3-day event there at the Kentucky Horse Park. And so good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Glenn. I just realized something. I know why Chad agreed to come to Rolex this year.
Why?
Well, Jamie's got this up-and-coming event horse of hers, Jet, who's really showing a lot of promise. He was concerned she wasn't going to come back.
And that might be
figured,
true.
No, she might just pop that boy on a Sally horse van. And
that might be true. And I'll tell you what, I saw Jamie post as she arrived at the park this morning on Facebook. She posted, "Rolex, Rolex, Rolex, Rolex," with about 85 exclamation points. God, I love Kentucky. So he better make sure she gets back on the plane to head back to Phoenix, or he's going to have himself a problem. He's going to have to fly his fighter jet out to Kentucky to visit her.
Well, the bigger problem will be he'll have everybody but Jet to take care of at home. He's got 22 guinea pigs, 105 chickens, 16 or 17 horses, a dozen
25 dogs.
Yeah.
Not to mention, what's the name of the cat that hangs out on the roof?
Frank. How can you forget
Frank?
Frank
the cat. Yeah, I can't forget Frank. He hangs out on the roof
Frank
up there. Well, Jennifer and I have some guests coming on today that are at the Kentucky Horse Park to give us a bit of a preview of the events that are going on over there.
It's not officially started competing yet, right? It's just
that's correct. Today, matter of fact, right about now, they should be doing the warm-up rides for dressage over there. We're going to explain how 3-day eventing works. We know we have a lot of varied listeners on the show here at Horses in the Morning who may not totally understand how that whole competition works. So we're going to go over that with you here in a little bit as well. We'll give you some of the details about this event and how many riders, and we have some interviews that U.S. Eventing was kind enough to provide. So we'll let you hear from some of the riders also as we go through the next hour. But it's fun. This is the first time Jennifer and I think it's the first time we've actually officially done a show together.
Well, this show together.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I mean, this show. Done Horses
We've
in the
done
Morning.
Scoop together a couple of times and tip together a couple of times, but this is the first time that it's just been you and I in the studio with without Jamie or Reese or somebody else to help keep me from causing large amounts of dead air.
Yes, or to keep Jennifer from Jennifer and I from ending up in a marital discord during the show. So we hope that doesn't happen either. Let's
That's
do our daily
offices in this house. Separate.
Let's do our daily Winnie. Well, my daily Winnie does go out to Jamie's husband, Chad. This is his first trip to the Kentucky Horse Park for Rolex. And when you're a horse husband and your wife is as into a horse show as Jamie is into the Rolex three-day event, it is quite an experience being drug around at about 110 miles an hour for 4 days. And then also, I know Jamie has plans to take him out to Keeneland and to the races and to see all the other sites. He is going to be one busy boy. I just hope he has time to sit down and have a Kentucky bourbon before this whole weekend is over, because she is going to have him busy. And I hope he has hold of the credit cards, because there's a heck of a shopping venue over there at Rolex. And
yeah,
I feel for him.
It's the most fantastic annual shopping event any horse person could enjoy in America.
We had a little bit different when we went to Rolex for the first time. It was because we were working there. And were we with Bit of Britain at the time? Or did we do, was that the first one?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember. That might have been the first one. It was a long time ago. But the first time I ever went to Rolex, period, I think there were four vendors. You know, it was a guy selling socks and a guy selling those little plastic poncho raincoats. And in the old days, as they say.
That's true. That is true. It's come a long way. There's must be hundreds of vendors there now.
There are hundreds of them, yeah. And the best part is that it's outdoors. Unlike the expos that we have all over the country now, which are perfectly fantastic, it's a very, very different experience when it's outdoors like Rolex is, and it's in such a very large venue, which is a plus and a minus. I mean, you're worn out at the end of 4 days, but on the other hand, being such a huge venue, it's very open and airy, and versus outdoor venues, for example, in Wellington, places like that. It's a very small space physically, so the vendors are really crammed in. You don't have that at Rolex. It's wide open spaces and rolling hills, and you have time to sit down in the grass and eat your Rolex fair food. Yeah.
Well, let's do your daily Winnie.
Da-da-da-da. My daily Winnie goes to my brother Daniel, who had a birthday last week. So hit the birthday button, Glenn.
Happy birthday.
There we go. And in all of his 51 years, I think I've sent him 3 birthday cards. And he gets this daily Winnie because he does not hold it against me.
Well, I think it's fair, because I think he's probably sent you about 3 birthday cards, too. So I think you guys are even.
Well, and I'm pretty sure the 3 birthday cards I did get came because his wife, Patty, held the card in front of him and gave him a pen.
Yeah, well, and, you know, to be fair, he was in the military at Green Beret and in the military for 25-odd years and always traveling. So most of those times you couldn't even call up if you wanted to.
Well, no, there was no address I could really send things to. It was like in the sandbox. Somewhere,
right?
Yeah.
You know, you would have had to call on a secure military radio, and they frown upon that. So, for those of you who are just joining us, you have Jennifer and I today. We are still in the studios in Ocala, Florida, hoping to change that here shortly. We had a slight change of plans. We will be coming to you live from the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event tomorrow morning. Jamie is there, has arrived. She got in late last night and is on the ground getting things set up today. So that'll be happening. Just wanted to tell you, for all the new people that have popped in here, Let's talk a little bit about what a three-day event is, Jennifer. We have covered that quite a bit here on Horses in the Morning, but we have a lot of listeners that are into racing, that are riding Western trail riders. We have listeners from all over the world who may not understand what we're going to be talking about the next couple of days. We'll be coming to you Friday, Saturday, and Sunday morning this week, live at 9 a.m., so please tune in every day if you can, or catch it on the recorded show later in the day. So a three-day event is comprised of three parts. That's why thus the name three-day event. Now, the first thing you need to understand about a three-day event is they go 4 days.
And right.
The reason for that, that's always confused the heck out of me. The reason for that is the first three-day event is dressage. And dressage takes 2 days. And that's it really is a three-phase event, but the first phase of that takes 2 days, and that's why
and
it ends up being a four-day event.
Yeah, they have so many, they have a lot of rides, and they really cannot accomplish them all in 1 day because each competitor, their dressage test takes, by the time you add the breaks in between rides, 5 or 6 minutes plus a lunch break, et cetera, and the same judges have to judge everybody because the Rolex Kentucky three-day event is all one division, unlike many smaller events. Lots of different divisions, lots of different judges. They can do lots of dressage tests in 1 day, whereas at Rolex, because it's a 4-star and only a 4-star, which is the highest level they make in eventing, it takes 2 days to get through all those dressage tests, and it's 2 long days for those judges.
Yeah, I can't say I'm heartbroken not seeing the dressage tests today. If I'll catch a couple of them, I hope. But
as cool and crisp as it is, they're going to be exciting.
Yeah, there might be a few exciting horses. As a matter of fact, the weather there yesterday during the trot, and I'll talk about that, was beautiful. But they did have rain overnight, rained all night, which will actually help the footing on cross country for the weekend. It won't be so hard. And they are expecting just showers, but otherwise it's going to be in the 60s and 70s and should be perfect Kentucky weather. So that'll be what will happen today and tomorrow will be the dressage phase. We have Reese Coughler-Stanfield coming on with us in a little bit. She's going to be at the horse park this morning, and she's going to talk us through exactly what goes on during dressage and what it is and how it differs from the pure dressage riders, the eventers, what they do, that kind of thing. So she's going to be here in a few minutes to talk to us about that, our resident dressage expert. And then on Saturday is probably the day that most people come out to an event for, and that's when the largest crowds are, and that is the cross-country phase. So talk about that, Jennifer.
Cross-country, the horses and riders, it's the same horse and rider team throughout all phases of the competition, go out on the gorgeous rolling hills of Lexington, Kentucky at the horse park and gallop around at breakneck speed over quote, natural obstacles, although they're not natural. They are built specific for the competition. And it's a spectacle. It's just, that's all you can say is it's a spectacle. And anybody who hasn't seen it yet, put that on your bucket list. And it
now
looks like we have a record number of rides for this year, too.
Well, yeah, there were a record number of entries, 73 entries, 57 horses will actually compete. We'll talk a little bit more about that as well. I will say while we're talking about cross country, there is a quote from John Long of the United States Equestrian Federation, CEO. He says the cross country course is going to be tight because of space constrictions in the Olympic venue in Greenwich Park in London. The course designer, Derek DeGrazia, for Kentucky tried to replicate what they will face there. It's much tighter than in the past, and is going to call for a more technical ride rather than a full-out gallop around the course. So what they're trying to do, because this is also a qualification ride for the Olympics, the Olympic committees will be looking at these riders to see who they might want to drag along to London in a couple of months. They're going to design, the course is designed to replicate more of what it's going to be like at Greenwich Park in England. That's a smaller park, so there's just not as much wide open space as you have at some of the other venues, so they're going to make this one much tighter, too. That'll be a little bit different for Kentucky, won't it?
Very much so, because it's typically covers such a large space, and less so than it did in its early days when it was the full format, but still a pretty big open galloping courses with some very deceiving low hills. There are certain spots on the course that it's a hill, but you, there's nothing to that. It's very long, you know, a couple of hundred yards and very gentle, that the riders have to contend with, making sure they're keeping their horses balanced and make sure they have enough horse by the end of the course, because those long hills can be very deceptive and tire your horse or get him unbalanced and you don't realize it. So I'm kind of bummed that I don't get to go up and witness that for myself. I'm going to have to be tuning into all of the online video coverage to see how that course pans out, because it's going to be different this year.
Check the USAF website for video coverage of the competition. The United States Equestrian Federation will be providing coverage, video coverage from there, as well as we'll be there, and the Eventing Radio Show will be wrapping up with rider interviews every evening. So check the Eventing Radio Show Facebook page would be the best place to go to keep caught up on when that show comes out every evening. Chris will be recording those up there as well. Well, the third and final phase, Jennifer, is stadium course, and that's run much like you would see a show jumper course run or stadium course run.
Yep, it's show jumping, just like show jumping would be if you went to a jumper show. It's the final phase to sort out who is still fit and sound and sharp after that long cross-country course. Obviously, every horse who competes is sound because there's a veterinary inspection after cross-country and before stadium. They're not allowed to continue unless they pass a very thorough veterinary inspection to make sure everybody's sound. But there's sound, and then there's sound, but not really on your best game. And that happens in the brand sparkling new arena over there next to the lake on at the horse park. And that's always very exciting. It's, you know, up to the last second, they run them in reverse order. So the horse with the best score goes last, and it's right up to the very last minute. It's awesome.
All right, Jennifer, why don't you go get our first guest on the line, and I'll tell everybody a little bit more about some of the...
I'll talk
about the statistics of the Rolex Kentucky three-day event. There are riders from the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Australia, and New Zealand. They're competing for $250,000 in prize money and a berth on the respective Olympic teams, which is why there's so many international competitors this year. They're all trying to get their spots on the teams. Several past Rolex winners are going to and Olympic winners will be there. Including the 1996 Rolex winner Stephen Bradley, 2008 winner Philip Dutton, and three-time winner Karen O'Connor. All representing the United States are going to be riding this year. And by the way, Karen O'Connor looked great in her in the inspection yesterday. She was dressed in an all-white suit, and she was sporting blonde hair, which I haven't seen before. Other top names include Britain's William Fox Pitt, who Jamie talks about a lot, 2010 Rolex winner. He was the winner in 2010. In Australia's Clayton Fredericks was winner in 2007. Andrew Hoy in 2006. They're all competing and will be there as well. And we normally attract 60 to 80,000 people show up to Kentucky Horse Park. With the weather being as good as it's going to be, I think that they'll be attracting at least that many this year. And being that it's a pre-Olympic Rolex, you'll be seeing a lot more people coming out. You know, weather has always been an issue at Rolex. It's either freezing cold and raining. Last year, they evacuated the park on Cross Country Day because of tornado warnings. We've had hot, where it's been so hot that people are passing out. It's just been a little bit of everything. But this year, it looks like it might be just the kind of perfect weather. And we're going to take a break. We have a guest coming up who is at Rolex. A lot of things go on at Rolex, not just the competition. But there is also, you know, many things outside the competition that happen. And one of those things is that authors show up to debut books. And there's, you know, the trade fairs and just all kinds of exhibitions and things. Well, we have one of those authors that has a fascinating book that came out, and we're going to hear about her book and what she thinks. I think she probably is just arriving at Rolex now. We'll talk to her in just a minute. But first, we have to take a break for our sponsor this show. I'm going to find it here, actually. Here we go. Hi, Glenn, back with you from the Horse Radio Network. I'm here with Debbie from Equestrian Collections, and we are highlighting a program you guys have going on this week.
Yes, this week I'm highlighting our Mount Up to Rewards program. When you sign up for this program, and you can do that on our website, www.equestriancollections.com, With every dollar that you spend here at Equestrian Collections, you earn a point. As soon as you accumulate 500 points, you will receive in your email a $25 reward certificate. It's a gift certificate that you can use at Equestrian Collections on anything that you would like. And it doesn't stop there. Once you receive your gift certificate, you start accumulating points again so that the next time you reach 500 points, you will receive another $25 gift certificate. There's absolutely nothing you need to pay to get up on this program. As soon as you sign up, it's free and clear. It's free money.
I love the fact that for each 500 points, you get that 25 bucks to blow on whatever you want. And for all of you horse wives out there, that's money your horse husband doesn't know about.
Perfect.
Where can they learn more? Is there something on the site they can get to? Or?
Yes, on the homepage at www.equestriancollections.com, at the bottom of the page, you'll see the rewards. Click a box and you click on that, and there's an entire, all the information that you need to sign up. Or you can always call customer service at 877-872-4415. We're here from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, Eastern Time.
Well, we're back, and we have Tanya Johnson with us. She is debuting her book at Rolex, Inside Your Ride, Mental Skills to Be Happy and Successful with Your Horse. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning.
Well, I got to tell you, are you there? Are you at the park?
I'm getting there. I'm going to be there in a little bit, yes, and I'll actually be going to the Practical Horseman tent and signing some copies here at lunch today. And Gina Miles is actually going to stop by. She is in the book. I interviewed several top and Olympic level riders and trainers on their mental preparation to include in the book, as well as the tools and techniques that I teach. And she's all excited and wants to see it. And we all just actually saw it for the first time. The printer actually shipped copies here directly yesterday. So when I got off the plane yesterday, went and was able to see it. Looks great. Really excited about it.
Well, that's terrific. Gina Miles actually has the distinction of being one of the first guests on many of our shows here on the network. She was actually one of the first guests on the first show 3 years ago and has been on many, many times. We love Gina. Tell me a little bit about your background. Where do you come from in the horse world?
Right. So as far as the horse side goes, I've been riding my whole life, and I ride in the hunter-jumper world. And so have done that my whole life and ride now currently with Hope and Ned Glenn. I live in California. I live in Berkeley. And so I compete mostly in the medals and equitation, amateur medals and equitation. And then on the sports psychology side, I have a master's in sports psychology, and I've been working with riders for almost about 20 years now. I've worked with athletes in all different sports, but certainly because I myself ride and show, those end up being the folks that I work with the most, and I love to specialize in the equestrian world and work with athletes, riders of all disciplines. And so often riders forget to call themselves athletes. But yes, the equestrian athletes from three-day eventing, certainly, and hunter-jumper world and dressage and polo and endurance and, you name it, and I've probably worked in that. Although someone did mention a couple weeks ago, asked me if I'd worked with anyone doing Western dressage, which I hear is a new discipline. That was new to
yes,
me.
Yes, it is.
but I was fascinated. I think it's great, The more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, now let me ask you, I want to talk to you a little bit about exactly what's in the book here in a minute. But, these are the top of the top that are competing at Rolex in the eventing world. How much or how important is the mental side of riding when you're riding at the level that they're riding at?
Yeah, that's a great question. Surprisingly, it is everything at the top. And so there's so much research and so many studies will show you that at the very top, Olympic level, international level competition, regardless of sport, you'll have athletes reporting that they believe it's 97, 98, 99% mental when you're at that level because the physical is so trained at that point, right? You basically have a group of athletes in whatever discipline it is who are at the very, very top. Their physical skills are absolutely on point. They have equine partners who are the very best in the world as well. And so it really just comes down to then who has it on the day and who can dial it in at will and stay present in the moment and not get caught up in outcome or be distracted by the random things that, as we all know, happen all the time with horses. So it's very, very important. And really it's becoming, in the last probably 10 or 15 years in this country, we're a little bit lagged behind some other countries as far as including sports psychology in support teams for athletes. But in the last, say, 10 years, more and more people are recognizing just how important it is and how you really want to train for that specifically. It's not something that just necessarily comes along. And depending on individual, people may focus on it more or less, obviously. But at the top, it really does come down to who has it, who can focus in the moment on the day. So, yeah, it's very important.
I got to tell you, one of the things that always amazes me about these athletes, especially at a show like this, when you get to the big shows or you're to the World Cups with dressage or jumping, is they are not only do they have to deal with their horses and their grooms and their team that is there helping support them, but they have so many things that pull them. The press pulls them.
Yeah.
Signings.
Yeah.
They have to go to signings. Mm-hmm. They have obligations in the evenings for the parties and things mm-hmm. that they have to go do. How do you keep that all compartmentalized so that you can actually focus on your riding? That has got to be tough.
Yeah, it's really, really tough. And so the trick becomes, how do you weave in all of those obligations with your normal routine? Because one of the most important things when you go to the big events is to be able to sort of feel comfortable, right? And to do the things you would normally do. And sometimes that's very difficult. And so it really takes some thought ahead of time. You know, even if you're someone who's never been to Rolex, or maybe you haven't had the same demands, maybe you had a big win and now there's more press request for you or that kind of thing, you know, you can think about that ahead of time and think about, all right, well, where are the times and moments that I will be able to just do my regular routine? Maybe, you know, I know there's top riders who need to spend half an hour polishing their boots on the day and need to take apart their tack and clean it themselves. I mean, you just don't know what things are a part of your own preparation until you really think about it, and you need to make sure that those happen. So even if they may have to happen in a smaller way, because you have less time, just making sure you have at least parts of that normal routine is very, very important. And it is key that you identify that so that you don't feel suddenly that you're just getting pulled, you know, hither and yon, and you're just going to piece it together. So, no, but a lot of the people I interviewed for the book, you know, on the big day, they've got, you know, most of those athletes have a really clear routine, even if they're not people who, you know, not necessarily built it with sports psychology in mind, but just have clear routines about what they like to do, what they like for their horse, what they, you know, they like to go have time by themselves sometimes, you know, all those kinds of things they are responsible for. And the dedicated athletes will make sure those things happen regardless of what else is going on. So it does, it becomes very, very tricky.
And do you have the actual, in the book, is there, because we obviously it's just come out, you're seeing the first copies
yeah.
of it too.
Yeah.
Are there exercises, does it get down to the nitty-gritty of how to train your mind, how to be prepared?
Yes, absolutely. That's a good point, yes. And it's very, I wrote it to be very hands-on and very clear. I really straightforward. I didn't want people to have to read through a lot of technical jargon and learn a lot of terms. And I really made it so that you could open it, look at it, think, oh, that's an interesting thing. I'm going to try that today or get some ideas for your show next week. It doesn't need to be read cover to cover. So, yes, it's extremely, extremely hands-on, a lot of things that you can just put right to use. And really my belief is that, you know, it's such a personal process, and you're the only one that knows you. So my idea is to give you a bunch of tools that you may want to add to your toolbox. And you might read through and say, wow, this really applies to me, or wow, this doesn't. And, you know, that's the most valuable thing is to use your curiosity and say, huh, are there some ways I could be better? Are there ways that I could be more mentally tough? And to allow that to guide you so that you recognize, okay, yeah, I could be spending some more time working on these things. You know, for example, if you're someone who you know, gets butterflies. You know, we want to be able to recognize that as energy and not necessarily as a bad thing. You know, butterflies mean, a lot of times mean your body is helping you get ready for a challenge. And so what can you do with those? So there's different breathing techniques in the book. There's different ideas about how you channel that energy positively into goals that you bring into the ring with you, and there are ways to do that. So there are definitely specific things written in language that's easy to understand and really straightforward. So that was my goal, that it becomes really something that you could just sort of have in your tack trunk or just have with you, that is something that you could use to, you know, when you have a moment, you know, if you're motivated, you have a place to put that motivation. If you say, wow, this is an important thing coming up to me, maybe there's a clinic I'm going to that I've been looking forward to for a long time, how am I going to make sure to use this to the best of my advantage? And you want to, you know, do some get some ideas, you flip through the book and get some ideas for yourself. All right, hey, here's a way that I'm going to, you know, it's how sometimes you go to a clinic and like a week later you're like, okay, wait, what did she say? You know, so there's ways in here of ideas of how to track your rides. How am I going to remember this? How am I going to bring this in to my day-to-day training? How am I going to chronicle where my success is and make sure that I can increase my consistency by understanding what makes me tick? So there's ways that I help you build your awareness of how you ride your best. So, yeah, there's a lot of specific things. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad, because I tell you what, so many books you read and they talk about theory and all of this, and it's very hard. For me, I don't know about everybody else, but it's very hard for me to take that theory and then translate it into, okay, what do I do 1, 2, 3, 4? You know, sometimes that's a hard transition to make, especially if you've been doing something for 20 years the same way.
Yeah.
You need concrete examples or you're going to keep doing it the same way. I don't care how much theory you read, you know.
Yeah.
So
I
know you have to head out to the park. So where can and by the way, I want to give a shout out to Rhonda and her gang coming down from Canada. They just posted. We are listening to the show as we drive to Rolex. So where can they come find you and your book?
Right, yes. Oh, great. So I will be at the Practical Horseman tent on Sponsor Row today at lunch, tomorrow at lunch. And I think Jimmy's going to be doing a signing, and I may be after him tomorrow during lunchtime.
Okay. Jimmy Wofford?
And then also, yes, Jimmy Wofford, yes. And also probably Saturday. I think we might target lunch on Saturday as well. So I'm definitely about, and I look forward to anyone wanting to come up and introduce themselves and have a little chat about their mental skills.
Well, you know, lunch will be the only time on Saturday that you're going to find anybody on Sponsor Row unless you take your books and walk around a cross-country course with a sign, you know. So.
No, I'm excited to watch. This is my first time, so I'm a newbie.
Oh, you're going
to
love it.
I'm excited to be a part of it. Yes, it's going to be great.
Well, thank you, Tanya, for joining us. It's Tanya Johnson. It's Inside Your Ride, Mental Skills to Be Happy and Successful with Your Horse. We'll post a link on our Facebook page to where you can buy it online if you're not coming to Rolex. And we'll hope to see you down there over the weekend.
Okay, great. Thanks so much, Glenn. All right,
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, right, bye-bye.
Well, Jennifer, that sounds like a terrific book. I love books that actually, you know, just get down to the details of what do I need to do. That's the kind of book I like. And we're going to be back here with Reese Koffler-Stanfield talking about the dressage here at Rolex and in just a second. But first, I've got to tell you about Holland Horse Tack. Holland Horse Tack is bringing to the United States and Canada a full line of horse protection wear by Indra. Indra, a name well known by European riders for almost 25 years, is the creator of high-quality horse boots, leg wraps, and back pads for the equine athlete. All Indra products are manufactured to the highest specifications with only the finest of materials, providing a sleek look, flexibility, protection, and support of your horse's legs and back. Holland Horse Tack is where you'll find leg wraps by Indra made of Hypalon, a material that is not only breathable, keeping the legs cool, but flexible, allowing maximum freedom of movement for your horse's legs. Exterior Velcro straps make for quick and easy application. Interior Velcro strip provides stability while wrapping and riding. Indra leg wraps are tailored to the leg for a sleek look and are available in two sizes. Indra, a name well known by European horses and riders for 25 years, now available on this side of the ocean at HollandHorseTack.com. That's HollandHorseTack.com. Eventing.com. And I got to tell you that Jamie uses these when she's doing her eventing, and she loves these things. So that's Holland Horstack. You'll find it there. Well, our next guest up is Reese Koffler Stanfield. She is our resident dressage guru, Grand Prix dressage rider, good friend, and cook. Joins us on a regular basis with her recipes here on Horses in the Morning. But today we have her working. She's on. Are you on location, Reese?
I am actually still at my farm.
You haven't left yet?
I haven't left yet. It's been, you know, we all know as horse people, sometimes there's just those mornings when you really, really want to go somewhere, and it's just not happening for you. We're having one of those mornings.
Well, hopefully you're going to get over there today to watch some dressage.
Yeah, actually, I am. We are dressed and ready, and after we're done with our cat, we're heading over. So, and it's turned out to be a beautiful day. It was storming this morning. We had some pretty bad storms come through last night, but it looks gorgeous now. And I think the first rider started at 9, and they would have had you know, kind of stormy weather, but it would have been okay for them over in the stadium.
Now, tell people that aren't aware or just not familiar with, what is the dressage like level-wise for eventers at this level? How does it differ from dressage that the pure dressage riders ride?
Well, this is a great question. It's actually basically a third-level test that they have to perform. There's one flying change each direction, and they actually do that twice. They do half pass in the cat. Actually, in this test, I have it right in front of me. I'm taking a look at it. They're doing four-star test B at this event. It was the same one I did last year for the test ride. And I have to be honest, this test doesn't flow very well. So I think it's a difficult test to ride well because there's a serpentine loop. It just doesn't flow, and they're looking in that serpentine loop for accuracy, a true canter, and relaxation. And that's the hardest part about this test for these really, really fit event horses, is just the relaxation part of this.
So when you say third level for dressage, if we were comparing it to pure dressage, how many levels are above that then for pure dressage?
Well, for pure dressage, there's one more national level, which is fourth level, and then you get into the international levels of pre-St. George, Intermediate 1, Intermediate 2, and Grand Prix. So this test is kind of a medium-level test is where you're going to go, but it definitely asks some elements that are challenging. There's some hard things in this test. There's shoulder in, there's half pass, there's a rein back, then there's this serpentine loop with flying changes, which is a very difficult movement, and then they have to do, we call it the V, they have to do a V of flying changes where they really just have to ask the horse for the flying change in a specific spot, and so it's challenging. It's a challenging test, so we'll see how they do.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing, too, that I want you to talk about this a little bit, you actually train eventers, some lower-level eventers, and some higher-level eventers, and the hard thing is that these horses are then expected the next day, in many cases, to go out and to go like bats out of hell across a cross-country course over 37 obstacles and do that successfully at jumps that are bigger than you and I in some cases, and then come back the next day and do a show jumping course. That's not something that we see a pure dressage horse doing. So what kind of challenges does it bring when you have a horse that's this fit and this wired for everything else that has to be this quiet? It has to be so tough to get them this quiet for dressage.
It is. It's a really difficult – it's just really, really challenging. You know, I had the pleasure of coaching Jose Ortelli at the World Championships. So I've coached at this level, and the hardest part is just figuring out, you know, there's so many different things these horses are expected to do. You know, they're expected, you know, they have to be fit enough and they have to be relaxed. So it's really challenging with these guys to kind of figure out what their schedule needs to do. You know, I would never gallop a dressage horse first thing in the morning before a test, but sometimes these guys need to go out and blow off a little steam to come back and do it. And it becomes, just like any high-performance horse, it becomes a really specialized program for each horse. When we went to the WEG, you know, Jose would take his guy out and really kind of let him go in the morning, and he would do the pre-ride, and then we would get ready for dressage. So actually, the day of the games, he was ridden twice before his dressage test, because his test was like 3:30 in the afternoon. So that's the hardest challenge of coaching these guys. I don't believe that I don't believe in eventing dressage. Like you say, Glenn, I coach a lot here in Lexington, and, you know, all my horses that come to my ring, if they're eventers or they're dressage horses, I have the same expectations for those guys as I have for my dressage horses. So I don't change my expectations. I just think it definitely becomes a little more of a challenge as a trainer and in rider, you know, to work with that, with those guys.
Yeah, Jennifer, you had a question for her?
Well, and you touched on it a little bit, particularly once you get to the higher levels where the event horses are extremely fit. The difference in the warm-up, and for that matter, the after-ride cool-down for a third-level dressage horse versus an event horse who is going to be riding a dressage test of similar difficulty, what type of a warm-up might a dressage horse expect to do on the day of a big third level test versus an event horse?
Yeah, it's a good question, because, you know, I can more, when I was competing Casper internationally, which is kind of, you know, what these guys are doing at this point. When you compete at this level, you know, it's a totally different ball game than a normal, you know, it becomes really part of your life. These guys usually, even dressage horses, are ridden twice a day. That's normal for them, because they also, for the Grand Prix dressage tests, need to be super fit. And you know, not necessarily cardiovascularly. They need some of that, but they don't do the cardio that the event horses do. But, you know, those guys, Casper was ridden twice a day, and, you know, taking care of these horses, it's just absolutely mind-boggling how these horses are taken care of. They do, I mean, they have everything, massage therapists, chiropractors, icing. I mean, the routines at this level get so, they're so specific for each horse. So a dressage horse, you know, when I would ride in the afternoon with Casper, he would do a pre-ride in the morning, and I would kind of feel how he was feeling in the morning. You know, sometimes I would need a lot more warm-up than others. Sometimes if it were hot, it wouldn't need as much. And it just kind of depends. It becomes very specific for each horse and what each horse likes. For example, some horses like to start their warm-up in canter. Some like to start them at trot. Some riders like to start in canter. So I think, you know, at this level, you start to work with your coaches. And these guys all have coaches at each phase. They have a dressage coach with them. They have an event cross-country coach, and then they have a show jumping coach. So you work with each coach, and then you have to work as a team. You know, that was always interesting for me when we were at the games. You know, I also, Jose's father was his jumping coach. So, you know, we had to all sit down and make a plan. So it becomes pretty specific on what you're doing, when you're doing it, and how you're doing it.
That's fascinating. It's fascinating stuff there, Reese, and I know that you're getting ready to head out to the park.
We declared it National Horse Shopping Day here at Maple Crest. we've already ridden four horses, but that we kind of rode the horses that really absolutely had to be ridden today. And then, we are literally heading out, and I'll let you know if I find anything, guys, and if I find anything fun, I'll get it for you.
Before I let you go, though, I have to ask you, I saw a picture the other day that you had a baby.
I wasn't pregnant. I've said that a couple of times, and everyone said, I had no idea you were pregnant. No, if my fancy mare, Jamaica, my Grand Prix horse, she's just an angel, she had a filly on Saturday, and I'll tell you what, she keeps giving me presents, this mare. I had this feeling I needed to check on her on Saturday. She's at a friend's farm, about 40 minutes from here. So I went over on Saturday, and I loved on her, and she really looked like she was going to have the baby that night. And I talked to the guys at the barn for a little while, and I was getting in my car, and Eddie, the head groom over there, comes running out and says, Reese, she's having the baby. And I honestly thought they were spoofing me. You know what I mean? I thought they were teasing me. But that mare, she's wonderful. I ran back in, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm not ready. I don't have my camera. But I had my phone with me, and we did. We had a baby right there. She had the baby within, like, 5 minutes of that point. So it was such a special day, and that mare is such a special mare for me, and she just keeps giving me just gorgeous children. So it was pretty special, and I named her Hannah. And when Travis and I were in Maui last year for our 5-year anniversary, it's kind of a day trip, and it's called the Road to Hana. And so I named her after that trip. And just as we all know, horses are such a journey. And I thought that was kind of a cool way to name her. So her name is Hana. And you guys keep an eye on my Facebook page. She had like 200 likes the other day. It was pretty cool. So definitely keep an eye on baby Hana.
All right. Well, congratulations, Mama.
Thank you. I know. I'm just so excited. Yeah, I don't have children, so this is as good as a gift for me.
Well, congratulations, and have a great time over there today. Don't buy too much. Have fun shopping.
Baby Hana needs something, I'm sure. I'm sure all my horses need a little something, you know what I mean?
Thanks, Reese. Have fun over there. We appreciate you joining us. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find Reese, just search for her name, Reese Koppler-Stanfield, or you can just search for Maple Crest Farm, and you'll find Reese's website as well. Well, we're going to cut out of here early today because we are also making preparations, so we're going to do that. We hope that you enjoyed our little bit of a preview here. Before we go, though, there's a couple of news stories that we thought were important to get out. One is that Hannah DeGrace is retiring with an injury. She had injured a right front ankle following a workout at Churchill Downs on April the 22nd. Of course, 2011 Horse of the Year, or 2010. Let me think. I'm trying to remember, Jennifer. Do you remember? Well, she was 2010 or 2011 Horse of the Year, Hannah DeGrace was. And she's retiring. So now the other interesting thing about Hannah DeGrace is the owner is looking at selling her and has her up for sale. He says he is not in the breeding business, and he wants to find somebody who is that would be willing to buy her. He has a price in mind, so if you have, a few thousand bucks to buy Hannah DeGrace times 100, you can give him a call, and he'd be happy to take offers. He said that if he does not get an appropriate offer, he will consider bringing her to the Keeneland November breeding stock sale or the Fasic Tipton Kentucky November Select Auction. Either one of those. And the auction, there's an auction going on right now. What, two-year-olds in training right now, Jennifer, here in Ocala?
Two-year-olds in training, yep, here at the Ocala Breeder Sales. And it's interesting. They are just giddy with excitement over there because most of the statistics, the sale is up 50% for gross sales versus the 2011 sale. So things are hopping here in Ocala.
Well, let's hope that's a positive thing for the future. So, congratulations to Hannah DeGrace for the career that she had, and I'm sure she'll be popping out some mighty nice babies here. We'll be seeing pictures all over the place of her babies, too, just like we see Zenyatta's.
I hope she gets a Facebook page, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure she will. Well, it depends on, I guess, where she's going. We don't know that quite yet either. A couple other little things. Don't forget that Appassionata starts in Louisville tomorrow night. On the 27th and runs through the 29th with four shows as part of the Kentucky Derby Festival. We had the performers, or we had a couple of the people on from Appassionata at the beginning of the month. They have 40 live performing horses, including such breeds as Frisians and all different kinds for that show over there. You can find out more information. Just look up Appassionata. That's APPASSIONATA, Appassionata. And you'll find where you can purchase tickets if you're going to be in the Louisville area, over this weekend. Let's see what else. One other story. And this one's been, ongoing forever. We did one of our first shows on the Stable Scoop radio show was we had the people on who actually clone horses. Well, there's been the AQHA, the American Quarter Horse Association, has said that you cannot register clone horses for the past couple of years. Well, now there's a lawsuit. A member of the American Quarter Horse Association and two of his companies have filed suit claiming that the association's policy prohibiting the registry of equine clones violates They're going a different route this time. They're saying it violates U.S. antitrust laws. Specifically, they're saying that it violates the law that is for monopolies, basically, that that the American Quarter Horse Association cannot be in a monopoly and prohibit anti-competitive activities. So that's an interesting – I don't think this has ever been filed this way before. It'll be interesting to see what the court has to say about this, whether it's relevant or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a little – you know, I'm no lawyer, but that one sounds like a bit of a stretch. The very last line in the article, they have a quote from a representative from the AQHA, and I think this is what it boils down to for me from a horseman's point of view. We have some concern in that they don't allow cloned horses to be registered, because we cannot tell the difference between which horse is the cloned animal and which is the original. So if you clone a horse that's anything but a million years old, how do you know which one's which? Am I competing against the original? Am I competing against the new one? I mean, there's all kinds of,
There's a reason that a number
of registries do not allow them to be registered.
Yeah, the AQHA is not alone in that. And I'm sure if you know, this will set a precedent, obviously, if this group wins. I think it's going to be in court forever. The AQHA is going to hang this up forever. But the Jockey Club also doesn't.
More important things to spend their money on besides court cases?
I know.
The
Jockey Club doesn't. They deny clones. But you know what? They don't always look like the parents. I mean, they're not going to be an exact clone. You know, they're not like an identical twin.
The genetic makeup, and what do they call that? How the genes are displayed.
Right.
The genetic makeup can be the same, but how they're displayed can be different. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the personalities are different and things like that. But I can still see where there would be concern. I don't know. I could argue both sides of this one in court, I think. I'm kind of mixed on how I feel about it.
It's a good topic to chat about over beer and fish and chips with your friends at the bar.
All right, sold. You just made me hungry, so let's get out of here.
Okay.
And tomorrow morning from the Rolex Kentucky 3-day event in the vendor area, if you're going to be around, we are in the old indoor arena where the area where the judges sit in the middle of the bleachers I don't even know the directions, but it's in the middle of the bleachers. You'll see it there. So that's where we'll be. Feel free to stop by. And, you know, if some of our listeners stop by, we'd love to have you say hi on the air. You can give a shout out to all your friends. Hey, to Rhonda and the gang who are traveling down from Canada, you have a safe trip and we'll hope to see you. You guys be safe, and you'll be in Kentucky in no time for the beautiful weather there. When you head up from Florida, it's chillier in Kentucky. When you head down from Canada, it's probably warmer in Kentucky. So enjoy the heat there, Rhonda and gang. And thank you, Jennifer. We got through this without having to fight or anything.
Woohoo!
We appreciate our guests being on. We're going to play the show out today with a song. What are we going to do? Let's see here. Let's play it out with What Boys Do by Chancey Neal. It's the 18-year-old barrel racer. So we'll say goodbye, and we'll play the song out. And tomorrow morning, Jamie will be with us as well.
Boom.